Peter Dale Scott writes, finally, the chief press contact of the Shikshini Knights, Guy Richards of the New York Journal-American, published the claim, soon taken up by Frank Capel, by the John Birch Society, and by Willoughby's American Security Council, that Oswald, like another alleged KGB assassin, Bogdan Stashinsky, had been trained at a KGB assassination school in Minsk. A toned-down version of the story was subsequently published by Julian Sauerwein's Senate Internal Security Subcommittee, with help supplied via Senator Thomas Dodd from within the CIA. One more time, these last couple of sentences. Now, bear in mind the work we've done on the American Security Council, both in Radio Free America Program 14 and in the aforementioned RFA 37. Charles Willoughby, of course, nay Karl Adolf von Zschäpe und Wiedenbach, a German-born fascist, an admirer of the Spanish fascist dictator Francisco Franco. Also, the top U.S. intelligence officer under General MacArthur for many, many years. Willoughby became a key element of the American Security Council and the World Anti-Communist League. Also, an individual that author Dick Russell has fingered as a probable key conspirator in the assassination of President Kennedy. One more time. Finally, the chief press contact of the Shikshini Knights, Guy Richards of the New York Journal-American, published the claim, soon taken up by Frank Capel, by the John Birch Society, and by Willoughby's American Security Council, that Oswald, like another alleged KGB assassin, Bogdan Stashinsky, S-T-A-S-H-Y-N-S-K-Y, had been trained at a KGB assassination school in Minsk. A toned-down version of the story was subsequently published by Julian Sauerwein's Senate Internal Security Subcommittee, with help supplied via Senator Thomas Dodd from within the CIA. This piece of information generated by or researched by Professor Scott places Senator Dodd within that particular milieu, that political, intelligence, national security, organized crime milieu that I termed in Radio Free America 37 the rollback or liberation milieu. And it was that political milieu which underlay not only the assassination of John Kennedy, but a great many other things, including, in my considered opinion, the distinct drift on the part of the United States into overt German-style fascism. And it is in the context of what I believe to be that drift that we are examining this information. As we shall see, the American Security Council, which again was based, that is a private security outfit, an ultra-right-wing organization with many explicitly fascist elements in it, that was based on the files of Harry Young's American Vigilance Intelligence Federation. Harry Young was an American fascist in the pre-World War II period, and his organization worked directly with the Hitler-Goebbels anti-Comintern, and later, the files of that explicitly anti-Semitic organization served as the seed for the formation of the American Security Council, which drew heavily on former FBI agents. Next, we're going to take a look at Professor Scott's analysis of, or his discussion, of Senator Dodd and his role in the American Security Council milieu. Specifically, he was on their payroll. Skipping down in Deep Politics and the Death of JFK, Peter Dale Scott writes, but as William Turner showed years ago in his book Power on the Right, the ramifications of this milieu went far beyond the Hunt family and their FID network. Willoughby, in particular, was also part of the leading defense Willoughby, in particular, was also part of the leading defense industrial lobby, the American Security Council, along with politically active Army Reserve officers like Lieutenant Colonel Lev Dobryansky, who first brought the issue of Bogdan Stashinsky and the alleged murder training school to the attention of Sauerwein and the Senate Internal Security Subcommittee. In the early 1960s, the American Security Council was the leading public group campaigning to use military force to oust Castro from Cuba and to escalate the war in Vietnam. Senator Dodd was on the ASC payroll when he generated the Senate subcommittee report on Stashinsky's supposed murder training school. Well, again, we have taken a look, and due to the limitations of time, we have not got time to describe this milieu to the extent that we should. But organizations like the International Committee for the Defense of Christian Culture, uniting German fascists and veterans of the Third Reich with people like Charles Willoughby, again, Ney Wiedenbach, MacArthur's G2, with American reactionaries such as members of the Hunt family, that institution overlapped with the WACCFL and the ASC. There's a considerable degree of overlap with these organizations. That milieu is the milieu that was involved in the assassination of John Kennedy, certainly was involved in the assassination of John Kennedy. That is the milieu that I focused on in Radio Free America program number 37. And obviously, Senator Thomas Dodd was deeply involved with that explicitly fascist political milieu. That was the milieu which was forming prior to John Kennedy's administration, which rose up against him and struck him down. That milieu has been in control of this country's political destiny. Actually, one could argue, as Professor Scott does, and quite validly in my opinion, that that milieu was in control of this country's political destiny before John Kennedy's assassination. Kennedy's policies threatened that control. They struck him down for his presumption, and they have been in control of the destiny of the American political situation ever since. The next detail we're going to take a look at concerning Senator Dodd's political resume, so to speak, concerns his work as a FBI agent. He was a former FBI agent. I mentioned this by way of taking a look at his background. He obviously was no stranger to organizations like ASC, to the CIA. He was part and parcel to this rollback or liberation milieu. And what we're going to look at now concerns Peter Dale Scott's his work for the FBI. In a footnote in Peter Dale Scott's Deep Politics and the JFK, we find the following about Senator Thomas Dodd. Peter Dale Scott writes, "Senator Thomas Dodd, a former FBI agent, sat on Senator Eastland's Senate Internal Security Subcommittee and was still at this time a key member of what Gentry, that's author Kurt Gentry, calls the, quote, FBI stable, unquote, in Congress, loyal to Hoover." So again, note Senator Thomas Dodd's presence at his deep involvement with the rollback or liberation milieu, the fascist political milieu, which was responsible for the assassination of John Kennedy and which has been in control of this country's political destiny ever since that time. Note his role in helping to generate or to disseminate, I should say, the Bogdan-Stashinsky disinformation element that, again, focused on in RFA 15 and, again, in a big way in Radio Free America 37. It helped lead to people to cover up the assassination of John Kennedy rather than have people think that the Soviets were responsible for John Kennedy's assassination. By the way, the evidence suggests that the actual assassination of Stefan Bandera was probably authored by people associated with the Reinhard Galen spy outfit. Galen had become dissatisfied with his protege, Stefan Bandera, who was beginning to work with the British, and Galen retained his hatred of the British from World War II. So note again Thomas Dodd's connections to the FBI, his role in what author Kurt Gentry has termed Hoover's stable, quote-unquote, in Congress, his connections to the ASC, the key element of that rollback or liberation milieu that we looked at in RFA 37, and his role in helping to disseminate the Bogdan-Stashinsky disinformation story. This places Senator Thomas Dodd right at the heart of this rollback or liberation milieu, or in the middle. I hate to use the term in the middle of the milieu, but certainly Senator Thomas Dodd is part of that fascist milieu. And it is in consideration of that that we're going to take a look at Senator Thomas Dodd's role in the gun control movement. What we're going to do next is take a look at some material, once again, from Peter Dale Scott's new book, Deep Politics and the Death of JFK. The material that Professor Scott sets forth here is speculative, and indeed my conduct of this discussion of the intelligence, gun control, the apparent intelligence community connection to the gun control movement, my analysis of Thomas Dodd's political pedigree, which places him in contact, or actually part of, the rollback or liberation milieu that I focused on in Radio Free America number 37. And the possible connection between Lee Harvey Oswald's possible work as a U.S. government informant and Senator Dodd's various committees' work, in particular work on gun control, these are speculative connections, and I want to emphasize that once again. I'm not saying that there is a definite connection between the elements that I am discussing this evening. However, I think there is a distinct possibility that there may be a hard connection, and the situation needs to be explored at much greater length and in greater detail to determine if, in fact, there is, because there are some ominous potential, again, note the use of the word potential, connections, which, if they are more than potential connections, may indicate that all the brouhaha that we are hearing about gun control is not only a front for the disarming of the American population in the event of the declaration of martial law at some point in the future, but the possibility that the disarming of the American people may represent part of a long-term fascist program. Whether or not there is a long, whether or not the disarming of the population was envisioned a long time ago, and that's a possibility that I hold open, although not one that I think is necessarily there. Certainly, this country's political assassinations have been used to justify gun control, and what we're going to look at next is the possible role of Lee Harvey Oswald as a government informant, including the possible role of Lee Harvey Oswald as someone who was investigating the mail order firearms business, which was a major focal point of the activity of Senator Thomas Dodd's legislative activity at this time. Once again, turning it to Peter Dale Scott's Deep Politics and the Death of JFK. In a section of the book entitled, Was Oswald an Industrial Security Informant? So again, note that this is an interrogatory element here, not a declarative one. Professor Scott writes as follows. Oswald's business career is suggestively like Ronstadt's. That's another individual who had done informant work for the U.S. government. Also a quote, Marxist Marine, unquote, like Lee Harvey Oswald. Again, Oswald's business career is suggestively like Ronstadt's. In late 1962, this allegedly Marxist Marine veteran was able to get employment at the photographic firm Jaggers Chiles Stovall in Dallas, a firm doing classified work for the Army Security Agency, or ASA. While there, he exhibited, quote, communistic tendencies, unquote. Yet, again quoting, Oswald had complete access to the work tables on which the secret lists of place names for the Army Map Service were, kept. In theory, these were supposed to be, quote, restricted areas, unquote, in which only employees with a security clearance from the FBI were allowed to be present, unquote. According to the Warren Commission, Oswald's new job was found for him by the Texas Employment Commission. However, according to investigative journalist Anthony Summers, George de Morenshield's wife and daughter both said that de Morenshield, who, as we saw, had CIA connections in both Dallas and Washington, arranged for the job. I would emphasize that George de Morenshield, a good friend of George Bush's, was another of the people who was at the core of the rollback or liberation milieu that I discussed in Radio Free America 37. At work, his most frequent companion was apparently Dennis Ofstein, O-F-S-T-E-I-N, a young veteran about Oswald's age, who had learned Russian while he served in the Army Security Agency. Shortly after beginning work in the same month of October, Oswald and his wife established social contact with Max Clark, the chief of industrial security for the General Dynamics plant in Fort Worth, which secured the controversial TFX contract in the fall of 1963. By the way, I would also emphasize that Max Clark's wife, Gally Clark, née Princess Cherbatov, was another white Russian like George de Morenshield, and also, again, part of that intelligence, Galen, ABN, petroleum industry, organized crime milieu that I focused on and that I have termed the rollback or liberation milieu, a milieu which was behind the assassination of John Kennedy and which has been in control of this country. Well, actually, was in control of the country's political destiny before that and has made that only too clear in the years since John Kennedy's assassination. Again, a key element of Radio Free America 37 was my analysis of John Kennedy's assassination as the triumph of rollback or liberation theory with regard to fighting the Cold War or waging the Cold War as opposed to containment theory. Now, again, what we're looking at here is Peter Dale Scott's speculation based on the facts which suggest the possibility that Lee Harvey Oswald may have been an industrial security informant working for the U.S. government. Continuing. Thereafter, Oswald's proximity to potential subversives, worthy of investigation, seems to have been continuous. April 21st, 1963, 2 weeks after he left Jagger's Child Stovall, is the date on which his FBI file shows his first alleged contact with another FBI target, the Fair Play for Cuba Committee. Even during his next job at the Riley Coffee Company in New Orleans, both he and his co-workers talked of moving soon to the newly opened NASA Space Center in nearby Michoud, M-I-C-H-O-U-D. Even at the Texas School Book Depository, Oswald's workplace on November 22nd, there was a potential security target, the TSBD's credit manager, Joe R. Molina, M-O-L-I-N-A. Molina had a rough time of it during the early, quote, phase one, unquote, investigation by the Dallas police of Oswald as an international terrorist. A veteran, like Oswald, he had joined the American GI Forum, which, quote, the Dallas police considered possibly subversive, unquote. Thus, Molina had become the subject of FBI reports as well as of a Dallas Police Department security file. All this suggests that, like Ronstadt, Oswald's true employer may not have been the firm's, but a private investigative agency doing industrial security work. This would explain the FBI's zeal to cover up the paycheck anomalies and the reluctance of the government to this day to release Oswald's income tax records. So I think we should view that in the context that Peter Dale Scott obviously views it, one that is speculative, but altogether possible. And bear in mind, again, Oswald's possible role as an industrial security informant. We're going to come back to another of the leading figures in the gun control movement's connections, namely Lloyd Benson's connections to the Defense Industrial Security Command, deeply involved with industrial security, later on in the broadcast this evening. The next item that Peter Dale Scott goes into is also speculative, and this concerns the possibility that Lee Harvey Oswald, again doing work for a private agency on government contract, was investigating the mail order firearms business. Obviously, ordering mail order firearms left a trail pointing to the direction of Lee Harvey Oswald after he was assassinated and fingered as the patsy in, or as the quote assassin unquote in John Kennedy's assassination. In another section of Peter Dale Scott's book entitled Oswald, Klein Sporting Goods, Seaport Traders, and the ATF, that of course is the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, we find the following. Scott writes, as we shall see in Chapter 17, the FBI and the Warren Commission had problems linking Oswald to the alleged murder weapon, or indeed, any gun. Many witnesses claim to have seen Oswald shooting, but often their stories, incompatible with the FBI version and indeed dubious, had to be discredited. In the end, the key witness was Marina, who under pressure from her government interviewers, told them what they wanted to hear. Indeed, as we have seen, it was two white Russians, Ilya Mamontov and Peter Gregory, two key elements of that rollback or liberation milieu that I alluded to earlier, who helped to distort Marina's testimony. We looked at that in Radio Free America 37, specifically in the August 30th, 1992 installment of same. Continuing. No credible witness ever saw Oswald shoot, No credible witness ever saw Oswald shoot, although some discredited witnesses have claimed they did. The evidence, so weak on Oswald's use of weapons, is very much stronger on his interest in ordering them by interstate mails. If anything, the evidence is excessive. After Oswald's arrest, Dallas police discovered among his effects at least five mail order coupons for firearms, mostly from Klein's Sporting Goods and Seaport Traders, the stores from which he allegedly ordered his murder weapons, plus additional complete ads for guns. One of these, A Klein's mail-order coupon for the notorious Mannlicher Carcano was matched by researcher Paul Hawk to a magazine retrieved in New Orleans, a copy of the June 1963 American Rifleman, one of whose torn pages exactly complemented the ripped-out coupon. To complete the chain of evidence, FBI lab technicians found Oswald's thumbprint on the page from which the coupon had been removed. This last couple of sentences again. After Oswald's arrest, Dallas police discovered among his effects at least 5 mail-order coupons for firearms, mostly from Klein's Sporting Goods and Seaport Traders, the stores from which he allegedly ordered his murder weapons, plus additional complete ads for guns. One of these, a Klein's mail-order coupon for the notorious Mannlicher Carcano, was matched by researcher Paul Hawk, or Hoke, H-O-C-H, to a magazine retrieved in New Orleans, a copy of the June 1963 American Rifleman, one of whose torn pages exactly complemented the ripped-out coupon. To complete the chain of evidence, FBI lab technicians found Oswald's thumbprint on the page from which the coupon had been removed. The magazine in question was one of several seized by the FBI and Secret Service on November 23, 1963, the day after the assassination. They had been found in a search of the waiting room in the Crescent City garage next to the William B. Riley Coffee Company, where Oswald worked from May to July of 1963. The operator of the garage, Adrian Alba, A-L-B-A, later testified that Oswald frequented the garage, talked to him about guns, and that, quote, "Oswald's special interest seemed to be in how one goes about ordering guns by mail," unquote. In Alba's own words, Oswald asked, quote, "How many guns had I ever ordered? How long did it take to get them? And where had I ordered guns from?" Unquote. Whatever Oswald's motive in asking such questions, it was not to learn how to do it. According to the FBI and Warren Commission, Oswald, or more strictly, quote, A. Hiddell, unquote, H-I-D-E-L-L, had already ordered his Mannlicher Carcano in Dallas back in March from the February issue of the American Rifleman. If Oswald really planned to use the June coupon, it would have been to order a second example of the gun he was never seen to use. To order guns by interstate mail is, of course, an irrational way for a potential assassin to purchase his murder weapons. It lays a paper trail linking the weapon to the purchaser, or at least his post office box. Conversely, if one is investigating firms known to sell weapons illegally through the mails, a paper trail is precisely what is needed. In Texas, anyone in 1963 could go to a gun shop and purchase a weapon untraceably over the counter. Only in interstate purchases did the law require identification, and Oswald was interested only in making interstate purchases. In the words of the Warren Commission, using the name of A.J. Hiddell, Oswald had ordered a Smith & Wesson 38 revolver from Seaport Traders in Los Angeles, on a form which he dated January 27, 1963. On March 12th, he ordered a rifle from Klein's Sporting Goods in Chicago under the name of A. Hiddell. The Warren Report did not mention that in 1963, Seaport Traders and Klein's Sporting Goods were being investigated by the ATF unit of the U.S. Treasury's Internal Revenue Service, as well as by Senator Dodd's Juvenile Delinquency Subcommittee of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Treasury and the committee sought to demonstrate the need for more restrictive federal legislation to control the burgeoning mail-order traffic in firearms. As Senator Dodd announced, the existing situation had been studied by actually tracing firearms through the mail from firms under investigation. The last couple of paragraphs again. In the words of the Warren Commission, using the name of A.J. Hiddell, Oswald had ordered a Smith & Wesson 38 revolver from Seaport Traders in Los Angeles on a form which he dated January 27, 1963. On March 12th, he ordered a rifle from Klein's Sporting Goods in Chicago under the name of A. Hiddell. The Warren Report did not mention that in 1963, Seaport Traders and Klein's Sporting Goods were being investigated by the ATF unit of the U.S. Treasury's Internal Revenue Service, as well as by Senator Dodd's Juvenile Delinquency Subcommittee of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Treasury and the committee sought to demonstrate the need for more restrictive federal legislation to control the burgeoning mail-order traffic in firearms. As Senator Dodd announced, the existing situation had been studied by actually tracing firearms through the mail from firms under investigation. Scott goes on to say, quote, A.J. Hiddell's, unquote, purchase of a pistol from Seaport Traders on January 27th, 1963, without even minimum proof of identification, was only 2 days before the Dodd subcommittee hearings on the matter opened on January 29th. Sometime later, a corresponding purchase in Texas from Seaport Traders was duly noted in the committee's sample statistics. One more time. A.J. Hiddell's purchase of a pistol from Seaport Traders on January 27, 1963, without even minimum proof of identification, was only 2 days before the Dodd subcommittee hearings on the matter opened on January 29th. Sometime later, a corresponding purchase in Texas from Seaport Traders was duly noted in the committee's sample statistics. What made the FBI and Secret Service coverage so swift, What made the FBI and Secret Service converge so swiftly, only one day after the assassination, on the magazines in Adrian Alba's garage? Here, it may be relevant that the garage housed and serviced cars in a U.S. government motor pool used by such agencies as the FBI and the Secret Service. It was, in short, a locale already known to the U.S. government and conceivably used by the ATF to order gun magazines for testing interstate weapons purchases. Years afterwards, Alba added to his testimony before the Warren Commission, claiming that one day in 1963, an FBI agent took a car from his garage and later, quote, Alba observed the FBI agent in the car handing a white envelope to Oswald in front of the Riley Coffee Company, unquote. The House committee discredited this story, I suspect, correctly. But by impeaching Alba's credibility, the committee only further raised questions about the flood of FBI, quote, evidence, unquote, determining, or over-determining, Oswald's link to the Mannlicher Carcano. In my view, it is uncertain whether the, quote, Hiddell, unquote, who ordered the rifle was in fact our Lee Harvey Oswald. We shall see in the next chapter that Oswald did use the name Hiddell and incriminated him, but as if, quote, Hiddell, unquote, were someone else. The superfluity of gun ads could even have been planted among Oswald's possessions, as some have argued his Hiddell draft card was. For our present argument, it is irrelevant. Both Oswald and, quote, Hiddell, unquote, whether one man or two or more, were apparently part of a sustained investigation into illegal and improper gun sales. This investigation, this last sentence again, for our present argument, it is irrelevant. Both Oswald and Hiddell, whether one man or two, were apparently part of a sustained investigation into illegal and improper gun sales.